what I kind of call the emotional cycle of the extended breastfeeding mom, because there starts with the love and you're bonded and you're connected. And it feels like a superpower because no one else has this power that you do for your child. And it can feel really, really good. But then it can tip into burnout because if they're too demanding, and there's a shift between on-demand breastfeeding in the first year to demanding breastfeeding in the toddler years. And this is where you come in, right? The toddler years. And it can be really, really hard to know and understand how do you transition there. Their whole lives, if they want it, you give it to them. And it can be really hard to understand how to do it, to be okay with them crying if they don't get it. And that's really hard to do when you're by yourself. And so you just give in. And once you give in, it teaches them, well, I just need a tantrum and then you'll give it to me. And it becomes a cycle. So you get into kind of a resentment, touch out, burnout phase.
Ever feel like you suck at this job? Motherhood, I mean. Have too much anxiety and not enough patience? Too much yelling, not enough play? There's no manual, no village, no guarantees. The stakes are high. We want so badly to get it right. But this is survival mode. We're just trying to make it to bedtime. So if you're full of mom guilt, your temper scares you, you feel like you're screwing everything up, and you're afraid to admit any of those things out loud, this podcast is for you. This is Failing Motherhood. I'm Danielle Bettman. And each week, we'll chat with a mom ready to be real, sharing her insecurities, her fears, her failures, and her wins. We do not have it all figured out. That's not the goal. The goal is to remind you, you are the mom your kids need. They need what you have, you are good enough, and you're not alone. I hope you pop in earbuds, somehow sneak away, and get ready to hear some hope from the trenches. You belong here, friend. We're so glad you're here. Hey, it's Danielle. While there is likely no shortage of mom guilt in every single avenue of motherhood, if you accidentally find yourself or set out to breastfeed for over a year, you're likely to stumble upon a whole bunch more reasons to feel guilt, shame, confusion, sadness, love, and even grief. On today's episode of Failing Motherhood, I'm talking to Erin Harris, a prior client of mine. Erin is a wife, mom of two, and founder of Nursing Mamas. Besides being a certified lactation educator, Erin has two master's degrees, one in communication studies and the other in health communication, with an emphasis on the intersection between family and health communication. Today, she takes her 10 years experience teaching college-level classes to create virtual prenatal and postpartum lactation courses for nursing moms. She brings in her unique communication background by discussing how women can best communicate their breastfeeding needs to their partners, family, friends, and healthcare team. Her goal is to teach new moms what they don't know they need to know about nursing, especially nursing toddlers. In this episode, Erin shares her own journey in nursing her two kids, which could not have gone more wildly different. She shares so much insight into the emotional cycle of an extended breastfeeding parent, from love to burnout to guilt to grief to sadness and back again. Nursing toddlers is a whole new world compared to nursing a newborn due to a critical shift from nursing on demand to a toddler demanding to nurse. Preserving your nursing relationship comes down to coping with your toddler's big emotions, setting clear expectations, and separating your love and attention from your milk. No matter where you are in your journey of feeding your child, there is no wrong way. I know that you'll learn so much through hearing Erin's story. So let's dive in. Welcome to Failing Motherhood. My name is Danielle Bettman, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Erin Harris. Hey, Erin.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing good now that we figured out the tech stuff.
Yeah, we've been sitting here for like 15 minutes trying to figure out how to see each other. No big deal.
Yeah, I do breastfeeding, not tech.
But we have seen each other before. We've seen each other plenty of times. So that's okay. I'm so excited, though, that we get to do this in a totally new format for our conversations. So before I don't want to get ahead of myself. Go ahead and just share who you are and who's in your family to my listeners.
My name is Erin Harris, and I've been married to my husband, Scott, for coming up on 10 years. In March is 10 years. And we have two kids. Avery is 6 and Luca is 3. And they are a handful. They're definitely a handful, but it's just amazing and smart and sweet and sometimes too smart, and have definitely made me grow as a person and a parent for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you ever felt like you were failing motherhood?
Yeah. Numerous times. I think I'm failing. There's a lesson to be learned. That's kind of how I try to, you know, frame it in my mind, because otherwise it can be too overwhelming and you get too hard on yourself, because you're, especially after the first one, you want to do everything perfect. And then the second one comes and you realize that it's completely different ballgame and you just don't know what you're doing generally. So everyone's just kind of trying to figure it out. Which time do I want to start with? I think the time that usually pops into my mind is when Avery fell out of her crib.
Oh no.
And we have it recorded, and it was actually her pack and play. And she was kind of pulling up a little bit on the changing pad or changing table. We were going to lower it that day, and people had told us, like, put pillows under. And we're like, yeah, we'll do that. And she never had done this before, but she grabbed onto it and stood up. And I'm recording her, like, look at you. And she just, her big head tumbled forward, and she just dove headfirst off the side of it. And Scott lunged, like, he was a soccer goalie. And it was like he was lunging for a ball and caught her. And he calls it the worst and best parenting moment.
Yeah.
So lesson learned with number two was lower the pack and play and crib way before you think you need to, because that was scary.
That's super scary. Yeah. But we've all had one of those moments of like rolling off the bed or like changing table or something like that, where you're just like, no, not me.
Well, because they always do it when you're not expecting, right? You know, it's never when you're prepared. It's always when you're unprepared. So that was definitely like, whoops. Okay. Lesson learned.
Yeah.
But really all of my big lessons, like the first 4.5 years of my parenting experience, I can't disconnect from breastfeeding, which, you know, that's what I do now. But I had a really hard time in the beginning with Avery. And we struggled, and it was painful, and she had, you know, was losing the weight, and it was really kind of traumatizing. And this thing that seemed like it was supposed to be so natural, and I took 2 classes for, was really, really, really hard. And overcoming that felt like a really big success. And we kept going into long-term nursing, into 2 years and beyond. And then I was like, I have this thing down, you know, I get pregnant again, and I'm like, this is it. I'm an expert now. Right. And we latched. My goal was like to not use a nipple shield, to just be able to latch him right away. And I did. And so yay, success. But then he threw me a curveball 4 months in and just quit. He was like, I'm done. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I felt like such a failure because I felt rejected. It was so hard that, like, why don't you want me? And it really now plays into his personality. He's a strong-willed kid, and he's very sensitive to food. He's my picky eater, and it all culminated into this thing. And the more I tried to get him to do it, the less he wanted to do it. And we just tumbleweeding into this moment toward bottle feeding and away from nursing. And I had taken 7 months off. I pre COVID, I was a college instructor, and both my kids are in June. They are 3 days apart. Their birthdays are 3 days apart. But with Avery, I had to decide whether or not I was going back in the fall or in the winter. So basically 9 weeks postpartum or 7 months postpartum. And at the time had no maternal leave, paid leave. And so I went back earlier with her, really didn't like it, took longer with him, and ended up being stuck pumping by myself with a baby at home and feeding bottles. So it wasn't ideal. And it definitely felt like I had failed. But I think now looking back, I didn't fail at breastfeeding. I failed at learning and trying to understand him and trying to force him to do the things he didn't want to do. And that's a lesson over and over. And it's what got me to you. It's, I can't make him do the things he doesn't want to do. And trying to, you know, navigate that is tricky, and kind of, you know, reverse psychology on him is sometimes key too. But it was a really important lesson that every kid is different and I don't have all the answers. And just because something worked with one doesn't mean it's going to work with the other.
Yes. I think that's such an important lesson that we all have to learn in one shape or form. But for you, it was best learned through your breastfeeding journey. And that's what really took to you being able to realize just how powerful this is for your relationship with your kids, but for everyone else's, that you can help them, help equip them too.
Yes.
And I really just want to like dive so deep into that today, because I really haven't covered breastfeeding as a topic as of yet that I, you know, maybe in and out of some people's stories, but the whole experience of breastfeeding for me was a big part of my journey into motherhood as well, because just as I was preparing for labor, I was preparing for breastfeeding in any way, shape, or form I could. And I know that's part of your story too. So let's like paint the whole picture. So take us back. And who were you before you became a mother? And like, how did you lead up to having Avery, your first? And then what was like the immediate experience of new motherhood? Because I know it wasn't cupcakes, rainbows, and butterflies.
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't understand people who enjoy the newborn phase. I hated it. Like I just, if I could, give me a terrible two tantrum any day than a floppy newborn. They're so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Okay. So before I really, I was a communication instructor. I have two master's degrees in communication, one in health communication, one in general. I taught public speaking. I taught interpersonal communication and I loved it. That was my career and I thought I was going to do it forever. I was very passionate about it and I loved it. And when I got pregnant, I'm also very studious. I love learning. And so of course I dove deep into all things pregnancy and also breastfeeding. Like I knew I wanted to breastfeed. And I got a doula, which I highly recommend. I loved my doula so much. And she asked me, what did I fear most? What was my biggest fear around birth? And I thought that was such a great question. And really what it, for me, it came down to was I really didn't want a C-section. I didn't want to be cut open. And so the more I looked into that, the more it became like, well, the fewer interventions you get, the less likely you're going to get to C-section. And that got me to decide I wanted a natural birth, or I should say an unmedicated birth, not natural. And I did hypnobabies. I practiced meditation daily for months and was like, I'm doing this thing. And I did. It was 19 hours and I had like an unmedicated vaginal birth. And so there became the, you know, this huge success. Like I did it. I'm so excited into, okay, now let's have this magical nursing moment and, you know, go to latch and it's not working. She's not latching. And my doula looks at Scott. It's like 10 in the morning after 19 hours of being up and she goes, go to Target and get a nipple shield. I had never even heard of a nipple shield. I'm like, what is that? What's going on? So she wouldn't latch. We had the hardest time. The nurses, like they would just come in and grab me. And I would be like, I can't do this with three hands at home. Like you need to show me how to do it. And it was just so overwhelming. they sent me home with a pump and like a hospital grade pump, but maybe they verbally told me how to use it. I didn't have any written instructions of what they wanted me to do. And I just was already getting sore and you know, cracked nipples and all of that. And on day three or four, my milk still hadn't come in. And I called the milk line and the nurse, I told her what was happening and that Avery was very tired and not waking up. And it had been like 4 hours. And she basically yelled at me and said, you need to go to Target right now. She's probably starving and jaundiced. You need to get formula, write this down, go get formula and feed your baby. And at that was the moment where it was just like, I thought to myself, like, I'm starving my child right now and just meltdown mode. And called my doula. She ended up sending over a postpartum doula who helped me. And if I didn't have that resource, I would not be here today. And I think of so many of the women who struggle, right? You can't become an extended nurser if you don't get through those first 2 weeks. And so many people don't. It was very traumatizing, but we figured it out. But she would nurse for hours on me and then fall asleep. And I sat in that chair 12 hours a day. I watched all of Gilmore Girls. I watched all of Parenthood. I watched probably something else too, I'm sure, but like full TV shows sitting nursing. So I'm envious of people who have, you know, the easier time, but even bottle feeding, like there's an ease to it and the burden is lifted a little bit more than it is on the exclusive nurser that I don't think most women are prepared for. And I don't know if you can be fully, you know.
Right.
Until you're in it.
Because I remember you mentioning, like, why didn't someone prepare me for this? How did I not know that this was a possibility or that there would be complications or, like, that my body – something would be wrong with my body that, like, I wouldn't be able to do it? It feels very shameful to be, like, I'm failing my baby.
Yes. Yeah. Shameful. Just the grief. We'll come back to grief later. But, like, the grief of it – of it and losing the loss of the experience you thought, or I thought I was going to have. And it wasn't that I wasn't producing milk because I ultimately then also because of lack of education, overcompensated and pumped myself into an oversupply that I then had to continue to manage. But my problem wasn't supply. My problem was no one had mentioned different types of nipples. No one had mentioned different breast size and maybe that a small breast and large breast, you have to hold differently, you know, and for your baby. Yeah. And I'm like, that's the part. Like why I literally wanted to create a course that let's have a room, have everyone take off their shirts and go like, all right, you have flat nipples. You don't, this might be an issue for you. And because that's what I was missing. I took a hospital class. I took a doula class and it just wasn't there.
Yeah. No, that's such a good point because there's no like intergenerational conversations, I don't think, happening either, where you would think that you maybe would get a little insight into what to expect or, you know, what that experience has been in the past for people you know. Like there's just, it's not a conversation. It's very much happening behind closed doors and you're too scared to like mention it either. And
well, that's it too.
I know.
Yeah. With new moms, right? Yeah. Like you don't want to be like, wait till your nipples are bleeding. That's fine. You know, you don't want to scare people. So it's this fine balance right. of like informing without fear and not over educating to things that may not be necessary. It is really a hard balance to find.
Yeah. I remember specifically, I knew one other friend that had had a baby maybe 6 to 9 months before me. And I was at like 3 or 4 weeks and I was trying to follow the book, whatever like that Bible is for the lactating mother or something. And I was just like lost and feeling very overwhelmed by the whole process, feeling like my body was no longer mine, that like I was never going to get my life back. This is so over encompassing and demanding, like, how could you possibly ever do this with a toddler the second time around? I was just like very drowning in it. And I remember reaching out to her over text, just being like, hey, is this normal? Like, I don't know what's going on here, but this is really, really, really hard. And she was like, yes, it is really, really hard. And like the light at the end of the tunnel is around 6 weeks. Things will start feeling better and more manageable around 6 weeks. Just like hold on. And to me, like, I still remember that text because that's what got me through. It was just someone else's experience validating that I wasn't doing it entirely wrong and it does actually get better, because I really needed to hear that.
Yeah. And did it for you?
It did.
Good.
Yeah. I really didn't have too many over under supply issues. So things did really start to regulate for me, and it continued to get kind of easier and easier, as in like the convenience factor, you know, started paying off. I did have to go back to work full time and pump, which is a whole nother journey.
Well, and so that's a very interesting topic too, because I work with post-COVID moms, and post-COVID work life is very different for a lot of women than it was before. My first experience going back to work, I went like the week before school was going to start to prep, and I hadn't thought about it at all. Like, you know, a normal office situation, you can usually take breaks when you need to, but with teaching, and it's different even than elementary school, because my schedule was very sporadic. Every day was different. And I didn't know to not schedule myself two back-to-back classes, one of which was 3 hours, backed up to an hour and 25-minute class. And yeah, exactly your face right now. It's like, you can feel it, right? You can feel the discomfort.
Yep.
And oh, yeah. I didn't know when I went to my office, I was like, oh, wait a second. My office is a group office with a windowed wall. This isn't going to work. And I didn't know where to go. And there wasn't a pump room on campus at all. So I had to go back to my car in 90 degree weather and pump because I didn't know where else to go. And
oh no.
Yeah. So I learned from that lesson, right? And I had thankfully very supportive supervisors, but two male supervisors who were like, oh, okay, here, use this closet. Someone else used it. It's like a storage room. And they were like, oh, it locks, but you know, someone else was nursing in there and the water guy came in once, but that was it. And it's like, what? Like, so then I was all nervous. People are going to open the door. I'd have to crawl under the desk to plug in my pump and like move things off the desk. So it wasn't ideal. And I actually, that was my first mission, a breastfeeding mission, that I knew I wanted another kid. And so this was not going to be what I wanted to do the next time. And it took me a year, but I got two pump rooms on campus. And so the next time I came back, I was able to pump in a very nice room with a lock on the inside, and it was very lovely. Yeah, it was good.
Nice. I'm good for you.
Really, really proud of that. So with Luca, when I went back, in the end of January 2020. So I was only working 8 weeks before lockdown. And actually, I'll continue with this story and then kind of bounce back a little bit, because you mentioned, how am I supposed to do this with two? And I'll share my solution for it. Yeah, I was only at work and it was going well. We had a nanny 2 days a week. That's when I was going into the office. And then everything shut down. And we had Avery, who was three, Luca was 9 months. And we were both trying to work from the same office with three naps that didn't overlap. Luca would take like 40 minutes for every nap to go down anyway. And I was pumping four times a day and still up at night with him. So it was just like chaos. And I was
more than a full-time job.
Oh yeah. And I was just one of those thousands of other moms that went, I can't do this anymore. So I finished the semester. And at that point already knew that fall semester was going to be online. And I just looked at Scott and was like, I can't do that. And we don't have a lot of family help and consistent care. And so I became unexpectedly full-time mom. And it was not something I was prepared for or ever expected to do. Like I said, I thought and fully planned to be a two-income house, you know, working parents, and would have been perfectly happy with that. But jumping back slightly to when he was born, my milk had dried up with Avery during pregnancy. And, but I always knew, because it was my parenting tool. It's how I soothed her. It's how, if she was sick, she would take milk and nothing else. It was how I got her to sleep. It was everything. And I knew she was old enough to resent the fact if her brother was getting it and she wasn't getting milk. And so I told her that the baby was going to bring the milk back, and that she could have it when he comes. And so I relatched her when he was born. And that took some negotiation. This is where I started really learning about boundary setting, because she saw him having it all the time and she wanted it all the time. And that was too much. And the meltdowns, because she was upset because this little, she once said, like, I wanted to throw him in the trash because she just was like, I'm the boy who, what is this gremlin coming in stealing my mom? And so I finally was just like, you can have it in the morning. You can have it at nap time. You can have it at bedtime. And she was like, oh, okay. And I kind of calmed down the demandingness of it. And so it just worked. And so we started tandem nursing. And there was one point where they were both melting down. Scott was in the shower. I had boiling water on the stove. And I just sat down in the middle of the kitchen and latched them both. And they both immediately stopped crying. And I just leaned back against the fridge and was just like, this is why I relatched her. Like, this is the moment that I need this tool. And it's one of the few times I had Scott take a nursing picture. I just wasn't one to take a lot of pictures, and I didn't nurse publicly very often. I was like, I want to remember this moment. Take a picture. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my success. So we were still tandem nursing with COVID when the lockdown, and I just transitioned to being a preschool teacher. And let me tell you, preschool teaching, like, 20 times harder than college. There's a reason I teach adults. And I went on Pinterest and found a preschool homeschool workbook. And every night after they went to bed, I would prep out a lesson plan for the day, because that's what kept me sane, was knowing and having a plan. And I saw them, like, when I had a plan and they saw me knowing what I was going to be doing for the day, their day went better too. And then, of course, mine went better because they weren't melting down.
Totally.
And it was really good. And I'm really grateful for so much of it, because Avery has a lot of positive memories of COVID because of that time. And she even sometimes asks me, like, if she's home for the day, like, oh, can we do a lesson like we used to? And so that's
sweet.
It's good. And it's special. And I'm grateful for the, pushing through that, but it was definitely hard. It was a really, really hard time, as it was for everyone.
Yeah. So for Avery, she extended nursed and tandem nursed until about what age?
She was nearly 4.5. So how we ended up weaning, Luca was on formula a little bit over a year, a couple months, because he just was really delayed on food. He had a lot of trouble gagging and all that sort of thing. So I finally got him off the formula and then slowly weaned him off the pump, or I stopped pumping and just transitioned him away from milk completely. He still doesn't drink milk. Like, we had a conversation about it last night, actually. Like, he's like, no, I don't like it. I'm like, okay, fine. But
fair.
Once I stopped pumping, and that was a really hard weaning process too. Actually, weaning from the pump was harder for me than her, because my body was so used to pumping at certain times a day. And I literally would have like this insistent urge physically it was like needing to go to the bathroom, right? It's like, I always imagine it when you're on an airplane and the guy's next to you is sleeping and you really have to go to the bathroom, and you just, every bump, you're like, oh my God, that's what it feels like when you're weaning. And so it was really hard emotionally because the hormones were going crazy. But once I regulated from that, my supply really dropped. And what's amazing about nursing a verbal child is they can tell you about it. And so I'd ask her, like, is anything coming out? What's going on there? And my right side, which was the lower producer, had dried up at that point. And so we were just like literally three minutes a day, or like in the morning and at night, we would time it. And she was nursing and we had a conversation. And I just told her, you know, one day the milk may just be gone, and that's how it can end, or you can choose when you want it to end. And she went back and forth for a while. And there was a time where she would, every time she would finish nursing, she would give my breast a hug and a kiss, just in case it didn't come back the next time. And we both cried about it together. And it was hard and it was sad. Even though I was ready to be done, I was so like, oh my God, I want to be able to just leave and not think about it, you know? And yeah. But it was that time together and that bond was really, really sad to lose. But one day she finally was just like, no, I'm ready. And it was it. And she didn't, I fully expected her to come back the next morning. And she was like, no, I'm good. I'm done. So that was it.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. And, you know, she still ever occasionally would be like, can you just like pump some out for me? I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. But she remembers, I think she remembers the cuddles and everything, but she remembers what it tastes like. And I just was talking to another extended nursing mom with a 3-year-old, and she said he says it's his favorite thing. He loves it more than chocolate, you know, and it's so hard when it's that their favorite thing in the world and you know you're taking it away. It's really, really hard.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. And then contrast that experience with how Luca's experience was with like, you know, early on running into unexpected problems.
It just is night and day, you know, like hindsight. Now, obviously, I'm grateful for the experience I had with him because I think it makes me a better lactation educator. Because if I had only had the experience of a kid who never wanted to stop, I wouldn't fully understand and appreciate the struggles women have whose kids don't want to do that. And even before him, some of my friends would say like, oh yeah, they just didn't want it anymore. And I didn't understand. It did not compute because she wanted it 24/7. He literally would physically turn his head away from me and cry if I tried to nurse him. And some of it, you know, they talk about nipple confusion, and that's not really a thing. It's really nipple preference. You know, the flow of a bottle is more consistent. It's easier to draw out. And so he was just like, yeah, this is cool. Why am I working so hard, you know, with you when I'm getting the same thing over here? And I just knew I there was no way I was going to pump exclusively. I wasn't going to get up in the night and pump. And so we kind of split. I forget exactly how it turned out over the months, but I was very comfortable with like 4 times a day pumping. He got basically half of his supply, or my supply was half his feeds and the other half was formula, and it worked for us. And thank God for formula, right? Like that's, I don't even know what we would have done or what I would have done. I would not be sane, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
Because it needs to work for both the mom and the kid. And it can't be one-sided, or it's just too much.
And did you have clarity with that like right away, or did you struggle with any like guilt or confusion through that process initially?
With the formula?
Like, yeah, when you first had to introduce other alternatives.
Not with him, because I did with her. So I had a freezer supply and was, you know, dead set on like, okay, I'm going to like no formula, this, like it's so burdened on us,
yeah,
like that, or the fear they're going to have one formula bottle and not want to nurse anymore, which did kind of happen with him.
Or their IQ will drop 25 points or something.
Right. Or it's going to destroy their stomach, all of these things,
yep,
right? And with her, my freezer supply went bad. So I just couldn't keep up with what her need during the day when I was gone. And so I had to supplement. But it was at the end, and I think I went through like 2 boxes total, but it was fine. She did fine. The relief I felt having that backup, that the burden of it wasn't solely on me, was really nice. And so going in with Luca, I definitely had formula. I learned from the first time, right? Like I researched, I knew what formula I wanted and liked. That was probably some of the worst advice I had prenatally, was like, don't worry about it. Don't look at formula. Don't this and that. Like, no, research the formula. No. So that way, if you do need to supplement at some point, you can feel very confident that this is the formula you want to use. And so I had it ready. I knew it was fine. And he took it fine. It didn't affect his system. So we just went with it, especially with 2 kids. And maybe if it had only been him, it would have been different. But there was just no way for me to do that, because I still needed to give her attention and I wasn't going to be locked to a pump. And I at the time, the wireless pumps were like $500, and I wasn't going to do that. And I knew my pump really well, so I just kind of got latched to it. But I got really good at driving while pumping, as a tip. That's really good. You can get an adapter. And so a lot of my pump sessions would be in the car, traveling places. So I got really good at it, but it when lockdown happened, that really screwed me up because then I was stuck at home with them.
So, big emotions from little people are running the show at your house. Is that right? Do they fall apart when something doesn't go their way? Ugh, just once. Why can't they accept the fact that the answer is no? Am I right? The struggle is real. You're not alone, and you're in the right place. When your days are filled with relentless pushback, it is so hard to feel like a good parent. Especially when your in-laws aren't shy in sharing how they think your kids just need a good spanking. Every time you lose it when they lose it, you feel like a failure. The worst part is, without addressing the root of your child's behavior, you're doomed to play a fruitless game of whack-a-mole, reacting rather than preventing the next conflict. And next time, nothing's going to go differently. The good news is, when you have a handful of effective discipline tools in your pocket, you're able to step into full confidence as their parent. Parenting actually becomes a whole lot easier. I promise, you're not failing them. You just need more tools. So if you have a tiny human who's full of love and yet so, so difficult, if you can only be so nice for so long, if you've tried everything and still feel defeated on the daily, my free class, Authentic and Unapologetic, is for you. In this free training, I share 5 huge misconceptions in parenting strong-willed kids that inadvertently invite defiance, 4 mistaken goals they're using their behavior to meet and what to do about it, how to let judgment roll off your back and truly feel like the parent your kids need, and why what you're currently doing just isn't working and isn't going to anytime soon. So go to parentingwholeheartedly.com/unapologetic to access this exclusive free training immediately. That's parentingwholeheartedly.com/unapologetic. The link will be in the show notes. Yeah. So the timing of it was like he was around 4 months when he really started refusing. And then how did that match up with COVID hitting?
So he was 9 months when COVID hit. So I had from 8 months, I was home by myself with him. And so that's why I would like put him in the car and we would drive somewhere and I would pump while driving. And that's kind of what, and then I'd have a bottle ready for him and it worked really nicely. But then when that stopped, basically, like during COVID, Scott would have, he would take a break from work and go take him on like a walk so I could get a break and eat. And I would pump while eating. And so I really didn't have a break, right? Because I was still locked down and in pump land. But yeah, it was just 24/7 still, even with supplementing. It was a lot.
So you ended up then weaning him. Like, did he initiate that ending of the weaning or how did that wrap up?
So with weaning him from the bottle, that was more as he took food more, it was a lot easier to kind of just replace. Because with her, she wanted the milk. She wanted me. And so it was a much harder transition. But that detachment from me made it easier from the bottle. He wasn't like, I'm desperate for the bottle. We couldn't get him a sippy cup. Oh, there was one funny story in terms of failing motherhood. So both my kids really took to sign language pretty well. Avery especially. But the thing with kids and signing is their signs don't look exactly like normal, you know, like how we're teaching it or the books. And so the nanny was there one day and she was like, I think there might be something wrong with his ear. He keeps kind of hitting his ear. And so I was observing and watching him for a couple of days. And then I realized he was trying to sign water. And so the poor kid asking for water and we had no idea. And so I think once we realized he was asking for water and we started giving him water instead of the formula and we're like transitioning the fluids in that way, that really changed things too and made it easier. So weaning him was not as big of a deal on his end, more on me physically, and having to go through that process was not fun. It's just, you know, it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I know we wanted to really kind of like soak into the weaning aspect of the nursing experience on this call, because there is such a relationship with the mom side of the experience with grief. So go ahead and dive into that for a little bit of like what you feel like is a common experience, or like what it can be validated or normalized through like our emotional experience through that process.
So what I started to notice when working with women is I wasn't identifying as much with women who wanted to wean before a year. And there are various reasons why you need to or want to do that. But because they were just like, no, I'm done. I'm good. I'm like, really? Are you okay? And they're like, yeah, I'm good. But every time I talk to an extended nurser, so that's someone who's breastfed over a year, it was a different experience, because the nursing relationship transforms, and it's no longer this need just for nutrition. And obviously the whole first year isn't just that either, but the relationship and the bond and the connection and the love and the cuddles is just such a different thing in that extended nursing experience. And my big aha moment was I was interviewing someone who she had relactated, so made herself lactate again for an adopted child after nursing, I think, 3 or 4 other children. And so we were talking about this. And ultimately, what came up was that the reason she did it was because she didn't know how to parent without it. She had been nursing essentially for 20 years. And there was this moment where she kind of got teary and she was like, there's going to be a day where I'm not a breastfeeding mom. And it just like, I felt that. It was just this moment of realizing like, oh, this is something new that I haven't seen out there. I haven't seen a lot about extended nursing. It's all about the newborn, which is where I kind of started too. So I really started honing in on that. And there's so many struggles for women over a year, because like, for example, it just came out recently, the CDC and kind of aligned with the rest of the world and said they support women nursing to 2 years. Like there's nothing unhealthy, like doctors should encourage it or not dissuade them from doing it. But there's nothing educational about what to do at that point. Like, what do you do if you want to quit? How does it happen? And you're just kind of a floundering. And then there's also this isolation. There's a lot of closeted nursing because there's judgment. The older the kid, the more the judgment. So there's a lot of women nursing older children that just don't know what to do. And they love it, but they also hate it. And I was definitely there many times with Avery, like the just wanting to not have my body be the thing that calmed her all the time, and letting someone else put her to bed and being able to leave the house for an extended time without feeling uncomfortable. And so I kind of dove into this deeper and started interviewing more people and learning about the pain points, which I fully identified with. And a lot of it is what I kind of call the emotional cycle of the extended breastfeeding mom, because there starts with the love and you're bonded and you're connected. And it feels like a superpower because no one else has this power that you do for your child. And it can feel really, really good. But then it can tip into burnout, because if they're too demanding, and there's a shift between on-demand breastfeeding in the first year to demanding breastfeeding in the toddler years. And this is where you come in, right? The toddler years. And it can be really, really hard to know and understand how do you transition there. Their whole lives, if they want it, you give it to them. And it can be really hard to understand how to do it, to be okay with them crying if they don't get it. And that's really hard to do when you're by yourself. And so you just give in. And once you give in, it teaches them, well, I just need a tantrum and then you'll give it to me. And it becomes a cycle. So you get into kind of a resentment, touch out, burnout phase. When that tips, it's usually what I see when I have moms come to me and just say like, I'm done. I'm so done. I need to wean now. So if they're by themselves and they try to do it cold turkey or try to wean at night, they it usually backfires, basically, because they don't have a tool to replace the nursing with. And so their kid's upset. Usually they're both exhausted and they start feeling guilty and they start grieving, right? They start maybe thinking about like, I'm taking the thing away from them that they love so much. Maybe the kid says something like when Avery was two, she just said, milk is love. And I'm like, oh, how do I take love away from you? You know?
Yeah. What a terrible mom.
Right. And so it becomes the guilt. But more and more when I was hearing these women speak, it goes beyond guilt to grief. That guilt was really one component of the larger grieving process of grieving the loss of this relationship. And because slowly, slowly, they get bigger and the nursing sessions get farther apart and shorter. And one day, you know, it's going to end. And that can be really, really sad. And so they get sad. And then they get sentimental and then they get back in love with it and they, okay, let's keep nursing. And the whole thing starts again. And this can be, you know, an occasional thing, but some women go through this on a daily basis. Maybe they wake up and are already like woken up by someone grabbing their shirt and boob and wanting to nurse. And so without setting boundaries, this cycle keeps going because there's no way and no education out there of how to make it stop. And that's what I'm trying to do now is focus on making extended nursing more manageable and then making weaning a toddler smoother and keeping, as I call it, like keeping the love when the milk goes away. And Ooh. Yeah, so it's been really, really special. It's just such a big part of my heart and helping these moms. Like I'm really loving it. And it's something going back to COVID. I would have never been here without COVID. I had the thought that maybe somewhere down the line when the kids were older, maybe I would become a lactation educator or a consultant. But at the time pre-COVID, that job was on call. That job was going to people's houses. And I knew I didn't want to do that with young kids. But this has opened up literally the entire world. Earlier in the week, I had a workshop where I had someone from South America, I had someone in the UK, and someone in Georgia. And
how cool is that?
Yeah. And they're all extended nursing moms with the same struggles and building that community so that they don't feel isolated anymore. It's just been such a special experience to be a part of that.
And it's like so specific, but yet so universal for, you know, moms in that circumstance, and you're really being able to paint the picture because you've been there and you relate so deeply. And that's why it's such important work, because it is your identity. It is your life. It is your day in, day out, huge part of your currency of your relationship with your child. So it permeates every aspect of your life if you're in that stage, in that season of parenting. So how do you help families maybe be able to differentiate for themselves whether they're ready to wean or whether they need more boundaries? And what does that conversation look like?
That's a great question. So usually we start with how old they are and how many times a day they're currently nursing and also the motivation of why they want to. So if it is something like the burnout, that's usually when I start trying to navigate toward the boundary setting first, because really the boundaries have to come with weaning anyway. And it's sort of kind of the beginning stages, but it can go on indefinitely. What I find is women, once they set the boundaries, they feel like they can go longer. And the boundaries are different for each parent. So sometimes the boundary is around night weaning or night feeding. Sometimes it's about how they nurse or ask to nurse and how long they nurse. So there's so many different ways to navigate it. But the important thing is that the parent has to figure out what works for them first and then make that clear to their child. But the other important aspect that I bring in, and it's something you teach too, is special time. So part of weaning is like, you can't just not stop it and then go on your phone and replace that time with like not you time. They still want you. And that's something that I really try to reinforce, is that they love the milk, but they also love you. And up until the weaning point, or like now, if the milk is gone, it's because you're physically gone. And so if you tell your child the milk is leaving or the milk's going away soon, that's going to tell them, well, does that mean you're going away too?
Oh, yeah.
And so you have to start slowly. It's a slow process, separating yourself from the milk and showing them, okay, I'm still here. I'm still spending time with you. That special mama time when the milk is done, or front loading, have special time and then have the nursing session. But you want to start slowly replacing nursing sessions with special time. So that's one of the ways. And that's such an important part of it, is teaching what you can replace the session with, because otherwise it's just a void in your life, and you want to still have that bonded connection. And it can still be love and snuggles, but with a book instead of with your boo.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the morning, they can come into bed, but you know, they can learn that that's just not part of that experience anymore.
And I know that that's why our work overlaps so intuitively, because if you are using extended nursing as your main parenting tool, there can be a sense of helplessness or feeling suffocated or feeling like, I don't know how to handle their big emotions if I tell them no, or I can't tell them no, because I'm walking on eggshells around their reaction.
Yep.
And, you know, so much of that is what we experience when we deal with a strong-willed child, regardless of the nursing experience that led them to there. And so that's where not only I think your background in communication is so valuable for how you relate to families, but then you have those positive discipline tools as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that again was a blessing with Luca, I had to figure it out with him. I don't know how to soothe you now because you took my tool away. And I had to just accept that's not how he wanted to be soothed. He gets very internal, but my kids are so opposite. Avery is just like a firecracker of emotion, and he goes way in. So I have to really observe him, because if he gets quiet, that usually means he's struggling. And I just learned, I just sit on the floor and open my arms, and he just needs a hug. He doesn't need a boob. He needs a hug. And same thing with Avery now. That's my go-to. They still need me. And I think that's the lesson I really want to try to instill in parents who are grieving, right? Because they still want mom, even if it's not for milk. They still need that love and support and comfort. What I also try to teach in my courses is, with a toddler, it's not our job anymore to stop those big cries, right? When they're babies, you want to soothe them, you stop the crying as much as possible, but you need to help them learn how to process those emotions and get through them, not stop them. So it can always be hindering, right? Because it seems easier, it calms them down, but they need to learn to be okay with big emotions and get to the other side of it.
Right, right.
Hard. It's not an easy process at all. Again, that's why I found you. I struggled both. And I actually had a thought the other day when I was thinking about preparing for this, that I do kind of wonder, are all extended nursers strong-willed kids? Because they're very determined. They know what they want, and you are not going to let that go very easily. And so I do wonder what the overlap in that is. And it doesn't mean strong-willed is not, like, Luca is not a tantruming kid usually, but he is stubborn, but super sweet and affectionate and tells me he loves me all the time. But there was like a birthday party at school for his teacher the other day, and we were like, oh, did you sing happy birthday? And he's like, no, everyone else did, but not me. Cause it's like, they told him to do it. So of course he wasn't going to do it. You know? All right.
No worries of people pleasing there.
No, not at all. And so it's just, you have to navigate it and figure out, okay, for this kid, what works, and what works for him is very different than what works for her. Like, she needs special time. She needs one-on-one time, where the sibling rivalry starts coming in. That was happening this weekend. And it feels like, you know, especially, okay, so let's say that your extended nurser is the second kid. And the first one then wants your love and attention, but you're juggling that, it is really important to have that separate time and give not just the nursing and weaning child the special time, but the other kids too. And it can be 5 minutes, and it can just send that message of like, I'm here, I'm paying attention to you, you matter. But it's easier said than done too. It takes practice and it's a new tool, but it's a really, really useful one to have, at least from
huge.
Yeah. With my experience. Yeah. And I know with yours too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if we gave the disclaimer up front at all or not, but Erin did end up working together with me through Sanity and Solutions coaching with her husband, Scott. And big emotions were one of the things that she came in with struggling with, because she didn't have that tool of nursing, you know, with Luca. And he is a very, very stubborn kid. And so there was, you know, a piece of getting on the same page. That was a huge goal for you guys. And then I know that you were a very well-researched parent and had a lot of tools in your toolkit already, but you just really didn't like the feeling of being like a punching bag and feeling had to give everything to their needs rather than advocating for your own. So what was that experience like through kind of talking that out through coaching?
Yeah. So when I came for that, so I had known about special time through another program, but the other program really kind of was at an extreme of like when they were upset or melting down, that you just sit with them and let them feel their feelings. But my daughter would hit me and kick me. And it was always, if she was upset or scared, it was my fault. And it would be aggressive toward me. And I one day was like in the bathroom hiding from her, because I was like, if I'm going to unintentionally hurt her, trying to stop her from hurting me. And those moments, I'm like, man, if only I had my boob, you know, it just is hard. But I needed to set boundary around that. And I needed to learn and say like, well, how do I know when to say no, when to walk away? And, you know, that's where you came in and helped navigate that. And she's older now too. And that makes a difference, right? Like a tantruming 6-year-old is going to be different than a tantruming 2-year-old. And staying calm, right? It's wholeheartedly calm. It's really hard to do. But the thing I honestly learned the most from you is about the triggers and, you know, what triggers me, why does it trigger me? And I really, really, the big one for me is sound. And that's why it was also like nursing. Okay, it's quiet now. You know, in that moment of tandem nursing, it's like, they're both screaming at me. Okay, now they're not. So I got headphones or like little earplugs. Thank you. And if they start getting rowdy at the table, and we just moved, and so our house is still really echoey, it's a raised floor that I'm not used to. So sometimes it's like the vacuum's going and the train is going and they're yelling and playing with their plates. And now I just go and get my earplugs, and it's so much better. And I don't have that intenseness to me, because then I'm short. I have the short fuse and I can't deal. So that was a really, really important realization of like, I can't always change their behavior in the moment. So what can I do to change my thoughts about the behavior? And that's been really, really, really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much power to that. That really makes you feel like you are still in control, even though any control over them is kind of an illusion sometimes.
It is. It really is. And I think, you know, there are new lessons about that every once in a while, because I think I figured that out. And then some new experience happens that I have to learn to let go in a new way. Right.
And totally.
But for right now, things are like really, really good. And they get along so well. I'm really grateful. That's another blessing of COVID, because they would never have spent as much time together as they did in COVID. They're each other's best friends. They say, Luke is like, that's my favorite person. Like, they walked out of the room the other day and they gave you like separate rooms at the same time, gave each other hugs, said, I love you, and went and cuddled on the couch. It's like, not every moment is like this. She would scream at him later,
of course,
because he like touched her Legos. But, you know, it's so beautiful. And when I'm trying to absorb that and take those moments when I can.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And I feel like a lot of families have had that experience too. in good ways and bad ways. There's been a whole lot of pros and cons to COVID, but
yeah.
I think when we can see the benefits, it really does help to know that like we have invested time that we're not going to get back that has paid off. And that's really valuable.
It is. You don't get time back. And so yeah. I do not regret at all, you know, the decision to leave work. I still miss it. I still one day think like, well, maybe I'll just go, you know, grab a class here and there, but now they're just always sick. And so I'm just like, I don't know how to, I know they were sick for you this week too. Like, I don't know how yep. to have a consistent job with, because I, the go-to just in case person. So mm-hmm. this has been
same.
Nursing Mamas has been it's been a savior for me too, though, because I realized also during COVID that I tried working out. I lost my weight after I stopped nursing. I did all these things. I did therapy, but I need mental stimulation. I love learning. When I went back to school and did that to become a lactation educator, I felt so much better. And having this, even if it's just jumping on a Zoom with someone for 30 minutes, it gets me out of my head. And I'm so much healthier because I have something for me.
Yes, that is. I'm so glad. That's such a good point to bring up, because the word self-care and what you need to have as your capacity as a parent looks so different for everyone.
Yeah.
And that adult stimulation piece was a huge revelation for me to understand about myself as well, where I have always chose to and needed to and benefited from working part-time as a parent, because I need that adult conversation. I need to be constantly challenging and growing myself. I need to be using my brain. And to be frank, playing with kids is understimulating, especially when they're toddlers and like babies. Like, there's not a whole lot you can engage with. And if you have any neurodivergence as a parent on top of that, it makes it even more hard to focus on things that are truly like a game that you don't even understand the rules to and you're just playing wrong, or like, it's just very hard. So that's such a good point to bring up and validate for others as well.
Yeah. Take that time if you need it. And it can be really, really helpful. Yeah. There's only so many times I could sing Old MacDonald. Like, I don't know how the preschool, his teachers at preschool are so amazing. They just seem so happy with what they're doing. And I'm like, oh, God bless you, Amanda. That is not my cup of tea. So...
Yeah. Well, to wrap up, thank you for sharing your experience with coaching. It's been so cool to have you as a client, and you got like extra credit because you went through all of the family business plan videos that most clients don't end up getting to.
I highly recommend them. They were really good and really, really useful. And I got to know you more, and your husband was in them. And I really liked that. The family plan, that was the other part I was going to say too, is I know we need to wrap up here, but that was, so like Scott said, he was like, it's kind of like a therapy session. And we really got solidified on like where we want to be in a decade and how we can re-engineer that now, you know, to build to where we want to be. And
yeah,
so that's been really, really good in terms of, do we do sports? Do we do dance? Do we do nothing? Do we travel? You know, like what does that look like for our lives? Has been really, really good.
Yeah. And you came up with such a good family mission statement as well.
Oh gosh. Do I have it? I don't know. I wasn't prepared for that.
That's okay. You don't have to share it on the spot, but okay. I just feel like it's such a cornerstone now that you just, you know, can have and can build from and can evolve with your family. But
I do have it.
Cool.
Do you want me to say it?
Yeah. I'd love for you to share it.
Okay, so love, respect, kindness, and play make together our favorite place to be. Though mistakes will happen day to day, we will keep trying as a team. And that came from all the different, you know, lessons in your program. Kindness was huge for Avery. We always say like teamwork, and so that had to be in there. And so I tried to take all of these snippets and these words and make it into just a little phrase that we could, I still haven't done it, but, you know, put up on the wall and, you know, look at and remind ourselves of what's our goal here as a team and as a family.
Yes. Oh, I love it. I hope that makes you proud when you look at that.
It does. No, I love it. It was absolutely worth our time and money and energy to do the program with you. And I'm grateful for it.
Good. Good. Oh, no, thank you for that vulnerability and transparency and sharing that experience. So to wrap up, going back to the ways that you work with families, if you had like, you know, a pedestal of one takeaway that you want listeners to have from your journey and your work, what do you hope that they hear?
I hope they hear, if they're an extended nurser, that they're not alone. They don't have to go through this journey alone. And, you know, there are tools and there are resources for you. And that when the journey ends, that you'll still, the love will still be there. And it's still going to be a very, very special bond that you have forever with your child. And nothing can take that away.
That's so beautiful. And how do moms connect with you?
I'm on Instagram a lot. See me in my stories. Come DM me. It's erin.nursingmamas. And what I have for your listeners is, if they want, sometimes, again, you mentioned like there's the, do they want to wean? Do they not want to wean? Do they need, boundaries? And sometimes they just don't know. So I have a free one-on-one 30-minute session that they can sign up for at nursingmamas.com/failingmotherhood. And I just, we can come chat and figure out what your struggle is and, you know, how I can help. And even if you're extended nursing curious, maybe you have a 10-month-old or 11-month-old and you're not quite sure you want it to be over and what that looks like, we can talk about that as well.
Oh, very cool. So needed. And thank you for doing what you do now and for being able to share those pieces of your story and your life with other families that can benefit so much from just hearing their story and your story. It's so valuable. And you're so good at, you know, creating content and conversations where families can really just feel heard and seen. So it's clearly a strength of yours.
Thank you.
So the last question I have to ask you that I ask every guest is, how are you the mom that your kids need?
Because, you know, anytime I'm frustrated with them, I have to look in a mirror because, you know, I have the same things. Avery is very, both of them have sensory issues. And shocker, I discovered my sensory issue through my children. They were always very sensitive to sounds and even the trash truck going by, anything like that. She needed headphones, but also the socks, the clothes. You know, when I was a kid, I can feel in my body the socks coming on my feet and being uncomfortable with the seam. And so when she's freaking out, I can take the time that wasn't provided to me, you know, like I, and be like, okay, let's take a breath. And so I struggle a lot, you know, in the some moments, and other times I know I'm who they need because I have the same issues I've been through, and I can help them through that through my experiences as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's so valuable. And it makes me think, when you said earlier, I wonder if extended nursers, like the kids, are strong-willed kids. I bet that the parents, like the moms that choose to extended nurse, are also strong-willed moms.
Maybe. Well, it's funny you say that, choose to extend, because I don't know that most extended nursers get to, like, around a year, you're like, yeah, let's keep going. But when you get into like 2.5, 3.5, they're like, I never expected to be here. You know, most extended nursers think like, oh yeah, I want them to do it themselves. I want them to be able to wean on their own. But some kids just don't. They're like, I'm good. I could do this forever. So it can be a strong, like, butting of heads a little bit, but
yeah,
it's hard to navigate that. But yeah, choosing to extend nurse, I did a survey just to wrap up and tie everything together last week. And I said, like, if you're an extended nurser, are you doing it because you love it currently or because you don't know how to stop? And it was about 50-50. And that's the problem, is that a lot of women are just stuck because they don't know how to stop. And,
yeah,
you know, then they get judged for it because people think like, oh, you're just making your child do this. It's like, no, if I could magically stop this, I would. So yeah, that's
like, I don't know how I found myself here. Yeah.
Yeah. How did this happen? I don't exactly know. I never expected to. And then It's that transition mentally from letting themselves wean to taking over can be a hard thing to do.
Yep. And yeah, you deal with all of the guilt and confusion and like fear of parenting a strong-willed kid too, because if you're dealing with big meltdowns, you're feeling the same way of like, I don't know how I got here. I feel like we are a normal family with like normal rules. I don't know what went wrong. Is it me? Is it them? And yeah, there's just either way, you're not alone. And there's so much hope. And there are a lot of tools that can just help you feel like you do have the boundaries that support both of you. And, you know, you want it, you have permission to advocate for both your child's needs and your own.
Yes, that is so, so important, because it is a relationship. It has to work for both people. If it doesn't, like any other relationship, if it's one-sided, it's not going to work long-term and someone's going to burn out and it's going to be mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can sense that. They can feel when you don't want to be there. Exactly. Yes. Then that creates more of that resentment that builds, because any amount of time isn't enough, because they can feel that you're only half there. And oh, it's just a vicious cycle at that point.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. Oh, so good. Well, again, I knew we could talk forever.
I know. We went over.
We did. But that is what comes from these conversations. And I hope that whatever a mom needed to hear is what they heard today. And they can always follow up with either one of us more after this conversation, so that they too can feel like they have the tools to create a sustainable relationship with their child long term, whatever that looks like, and whether they're strong-willed or not. So thanks, Erin, so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. This is so good. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Failing Motherhood. Your kids are so lucky to have you. If you loved this episode, take a screenshot right now and share it in your Instagram stories and tag me. If you're loving the podcast, be sure that you've subscribed and leave a review so we can help more moms know they are not alone if they feel like they're failing motherhood on a daily basis. And if you're ready to transform your relationship with your strong-willed child and invest in the support you need to make it happen, schedule your free consultation using the link in the show notes. I can't wait to meet you. Thanks for coming on this journey with me. I believe in you, and I'm cheering you on.